Fought scheduled for five for the Strike Force World Welterweight title. Nick Diaz, the champion in white and black. Daly, the challenger in blue. Great body work by Diaz. Oh, a beautiful uppercut. Looping right hand. Daly falling into trouble. 11 seconds. Diaz going in for the KO. And it's over. Diaz has made history. Nick Diaz finishing Daly. And at one of the best rounds of the year.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
He is an iconic figure in the world of MMA, folks, a two-time UFC heavyweight champ. I'm going to talk about Mr. Frank Mir. Frank, welcome to the show.
All right, it's good to be here. Thank you.
Okay, Francisco Santos Mir III. Talk to me about that name. There's some Russian, Moroccan background there.
I think far back in my ancestry there is. We've done a genealogy on the name, and there has been talk about it coming from actually more Moroccan, even though a lot of Russians will tell me it means the world or peace in their language. I haven't found any Russian ancestry there, but a lot of Moroccan. My father came through to the U.S. via Cuba, and so Cuban ancestry, that's where he was born. He was 9 years old and about 66.
I just saw an interview with Fidel Castro last week. The guy's still kicking. He's 86
years
old.
My dad.
He's outlived like five presidents. They tried to kill him. They marked him for death. Kennedy, Johnson,
he's not
Nixon,
looking too
Ford.
Healthy, though.
It doesn't matter. At 86, you just want to be looking.
Yeah.
You don't want to be. Yeah. Frank Mir is our guest, folks. He's two-time UFC heavyweight champion. What's it like to be the baddest dude on the planet? I mean, like Mike Tyson used to have that tag, the baddest man on the planet. Then the world of UFC came in, the MMA came in. So now we sort of have two baddest dudes on the planet, the boxing champion and the MMA champion. What's it like to be the baddest MF on the planet?
You know what? I mean, obviously, I think more or less it's nice to have notoriety than anything, whether you be an actor, broadcasting, baseball player, a chemist that, comes up with something that wins a Nobel Prize over. I think all human beings want to follow something that they love in life and then to gain recognition for it. I think it's very rewarding. There are times I think people get carried away with being, you can beat this guy, beat that guy. I'm like, look, guys, that's great, and I love what I can attain as a martial artist and the skills to carry over, but there's this thing called a gun, and that kind of eliminates a whole lot of the who can beat up who thing in the street.
That's what I try. I was a cop here in San Francisco for 10 years. And I used to tell guys that, guys with big, bad guys would go out to bars and they rumble with guys. All it takes is a 105-pound guy with a 22.
Yeah.
And it's all over.
A crazy bum with a screwdriver might ruin your day and you walk with a limp. So,
exactly.
So I try to put everything in perspective and realize that if all you gain from the martial arts is that you can beat somebody up, I'm like, well, that has no value. It's limited. I can pay that $200, I go buy a little .38 revolver, and now I'm tougher than all your years of experience. But if you gain something that makes you a better person, and you master yourself, and you're constantly striving to improve upon yourself, and that's what the martial arts, it's my religion, then you have something that a $200 gun can't replace.
Yeah, I'm impressed with your articulation here. I really am. I'm sort of blown away by it. I know you're well-speaking and well-spoken. I've seen you do commentary and things like that. I know you've got it together, but man, I'm impressed here.
No,
I really
thanks,
am.
Man. I mean, no one's knocked out my words too.
Well,
two more punches, I might not speak so well.
No, but here's what's up. You have to sell yourself. I mean, you don't have to. Everybody doesn't have to be Ric Flair per se.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But you have to sell yourself, because if you don't sell yourself in this business, who's he?
No, that's very true. And I know a lot of people. Like, for example, when they brought that up to me, to bring that to give it more significance, when people thought, "Well, do you think Brock or different guys come over in the sport?" James Toney, when he fought Randy Couture.
Yeah.
I'm like, guys, here's the thing: you can be 30-0, but if no one knows your name and you can't sell out a stadium, and the other guy could be 15-15, but he's an actor, he has some other area where he has crossover value, and he's going to get a million pay-per-view buys. He's fighting for the title, and you're not.
Why is it some guys come to the UFC is the big tent? I mean, of all the circuses, I'm not trying to call it MMA a circus, but of all the shows, it is the big tent. Hector Lombard came over, fought Tim Botch. Didn't look like the killer he was supposed to be from Bellator. I know he's rebounded and had one fight since then. But is there undue pressure making the UFC debut?
No, I just think what it comes down to is a lot of guys, they're a big fish in a small pond. They're able to have a certain amount of success, but then I'm like, well, you're only as good as your competition. So I think some guys go out there and they compile these undefeated records, and it's like, well, but who is he fighting? And they come over in the UFC, and the top 10 guys all could be the champion on any given night. It's a little bit steeper competition. Like, Benson and I were talking about that. winning fights in the UFC is not easy. So that's why when you get somebody like Benson who's gotten, you know, six fights in a row now in the UFC and hasn't lost, that's an impressive feat. That's so hard. You string together two or three wins in the UFC and you're in a title shot. It's because it's very difficult. The competition is so much higher. It's like competing in the Olympics in wrestling. You know, you can go ahead and if we had the Olympics two, three weekends in a row, you're going to have two or three different gold medalists each time.
We're talking about Benson Henderson, the UFC lightweight champion, of course, taking on Gilbert Melendez, UFC on Fox 7. Let me go through your resume real quick, Frank Mir. UFC heavyweight champion, most wins in UFC heavyweight division, 14, most fights in heavyweight division, 20, most finishes in heavyweight division in the UFC, 11, most wins by submission in the heavyweight division in UFC history, 8, most wins by submission. I mean, I keep going and going and going. I go on for 10 minutes here, man. Like, you have a lengthy resume. All these achievements are incredible.
Yeah, well, you know, right now I'm still going out there, and I guess the good thing keeps me going because there are times, and I think all of us listen to, you know, sometimes outside influences, and you know, I have people ask me, so this is going to be your next fight, your last fight, you're thinking about retiring, and I'm like, wow, you know, I look to my wife, I'm like, wow, people are starting to say, you know, maybe I should get out of this. She goes, are you kidding? You're still younger than almost all the other heavyweights. I'm like, oh yeah, huh? She goes, how old is Cormier? I'm like, yeah, he's actually a few months older than I am, and he's just getting in the UFC, and people are talking about him starting his career. And you're supposed to be ending it? So, nope, get back in there.
Okay. Let's shift gears a little bit. When you took out Brock Lesnar, submission of the year 2008, a lot of pressure on you going in that fight. I mean, Brock Lesnar was like supposedly the monster. I mean, he was like, you know, people were saying, oh, Brock's not going to get beat for a while and this thing. And, you know, and you sort of exposed Brock as being somewhat human.
Yeah. You know, I don't think I put a lot of pressure on myself until about the week before the fight. You know, fans, everybody's talking about how big and strong he is. I'm like, guys, I fought big, strong guys before. People that are intimidating to look at, I'm like, you know, I've been a martial artist for so long, I put very little value on what someone looks like. I realize, you know, that, there's some pretty vicious human beings out there that look like, Clark Kent, and they're really Superman. So the only time I ever felt nervous, and I forgot which fighter it was, but someone else was on the card, they're like, hey, man, we're pulling for you. I'm like, oh, okay, well, thanks. They're like, yeah. You're representing the MMA world, and he's the pro wrestling world. You got to make sure you win. And I was like, oh, man, are you serious? He's representing the pro wrestling? I'm like, has everybody failed to realize the guy was a national champion in wrestling? He's one of the most, you know, successful collegiate wrestlers in the heavyweight division of all time. But now he's a pro wrestler? I'm like, wow, talk about like a build a thousand bridges scenario. So that's the only time I got a little bit nervous leading up to that fight was because of the weight that other people were putting on it.
Okay. Speaking of weight. Alistair Overeem put on an extreme amount of weight in a couple of years. He was like a scrawny-looking light heavyweight. Then he became a heavyweight of note, like 260 pounds, and everybody was whispering behind the, hey, we think he's taking steroids. Okay, and that's what they were whispering for a long time when he was a strike force. Then he moved over to the UFC, and he signed this contract where he would take submit to random testing. Said, hey, we want to give you a random test. So he runs out of the building. And then they end up catching up with him 10, 15 minutes later. He ends up taking the test, and he tests 14-1 on for a testosterone level, okay? Were you surprised that he looked as soft as he looked soft in this fight compared to prior fights? Did you notice a difference in his torso this time?
Yeah, no, he definitely did. There was a marketed difference in that. But, I mean, I've also seen that in myself as far as fights. Sometimes with heavyweights, the problem with us is that, a lightweight has to come in a certain weight class. So if he doesn't do what it takes to make it down, then he's not even fighting. Whereas we can all pretty much make 265, you know, with relative ease. So sometimes you come in a little bit chubbier. If you're off in your training when it comes to your diet, we don't pay for it as severely as a lightweight, middleweight, or the light heavyweights do, because now they're not fighting for the title, or they're getting their percentage of their purse is getting yanked off because they didn't make weight. So I was surprised when he showed up at that. I was like, wow, I wonder why his physique is not where it would be. But I mean, could have been injury, a lack of conditioning, you know.
Could have been the juice.
That could be the case. But, I mean, but he was always a lean guy before. Yeah. And then he got, you know, if you want to say that it was because he took anabolics that got him bigger, but then I don't understand why he would get fat, though. That doesn't, you know, obviously I'm
not a doctor. Stop taking it. You get loose anyway.
I just would have thought he would have got smaller.
Yeah, okay. But he didn't look like he had it. I mean, he didn't look like he was the fighter I had seen before. He didn't seem to have the confidence when he took on the giant silver that he had in the past.
Yeah, well, actually, I thought he looked pretty almost overconfident in the first round. Yeah, if you look at how he was smiling and leering, same look on his face when he walked out there. I just think that Silva was extremely intimidated the first two rounds. But I think the worst thing that that Alistair did was when he threw Silva. I mean, which looked pretty strong. He launched Bigfoot onto his back with a lateral drop, or a little body lock, 50-50 position, right? Then he gets on top of him and kind of punches him a little bit. And I think it insulted Bigfoot that he couldn't do nothing off of his back, that his guard was very lacking in any offense. And so when they got back up to his feet, finally Bigfoot, and starting off the third round, I think the mystique and fear of, oh, my gosh, it's Alistair, look at him. And all of a sudden he goes, you know what, forget this. I'm going to go out there and fight. And that was what was actually the downfall of Alistair. Had he maybe not put Bigfoot in a fight and just went out there and kind of jabbed and moved around and hit him and picked him apart, Bigfoot looked pretty intimidated those first two rounds. But all of a sudden he woke him up, and then that was the worst thing for Alistair.
April 20th, USC on Fox 7 has been a fantastic series. Of course, it's hard to believe you got almost seven events in the bank now. You're taking on Daniel Cormier, 11-0. What does Daniel bring to the dance?
Well, obviously, he's a phenomenal wrestler. One of the most decorated wrestlers really internationally to come into our competition, especially in the heavyweight, that I can think of off the top of my head. So I think that he comes from a great camp, obviously training at the American Kickboxing Academy, Bob Cook and those guys, Mendez, that, his skill set, they also, the camp that created, Cain Velasquez, who's currently the champion, and who has a very similar type of skill set as far as putting the boxing with a great wrestling foundation. So I think that he's a very dangerous opponent. I think that, he is in the wrong weight class. I think that, if you just stand next to Cormier and look at him, he's definitely I think he'll be much more successful at 205.
If he can make 205, and I agree. He might be one of those guys that's stuck in the bubble in the middle.
Yeah, but you know what? He wrestled at 184 his senior year in college.
Once you put on 40, 50 pounds, you know what I'm saying, Frank? I mean, yeah. some guys can take it off. Some guys can't. You know what I'm saying? Because he doesn't have he's got he's got a polar bear looking body almost. He's soft looking. You know what I mean?
He's a
soft
doughboy.
He's not a hard, maybe doughboy. Not a hard looking guy per se. And some guys, just once they get to that point, just like, I hate to say it like this, but sometimes, a woman after a baby, you know what I'm saying? Can't ever get back together again. Just can't get that physique down.
If he was able to put it down there, though, I think that he would be more successful. Because, he wrestled even in the Olympics. His two appearances were the 211 weight class.
All right, so what's he got to do? Stop the tacos?
You see my physique sometimes? I'm not going to give anybody a pointer on how to get down. But, his height, his reach, his bone frame. The heavyweight division, I think that, he's been doing well at heavyweight and Strikeforce.
Okay.
He's not been doing well at UFC heavyweight division just yet. I may be wrong. Maybe he goes out there, he has a victory over me, and is able to go out there and beat Velasquez, and Dos Santos's, and I would be very impressed. He'd be probably one of the smallest bone structured and shortest reach champions of all time.
How does Frank Mir? How do you see this fight going? How does it end?
Well, I think that he's becoming a very capable striker, and he's starting to enjoy it. I still don't think that he realizes, high level striking of the UFC guys. I think that eventually, no matter what happens, he's going to go for a shot and go for a takedown, and then on the ground. I just don't see him simulating. I think actually fighting Josh Barnett was probably a bad thing for him because he might feel a certain amount of confidence by going to the ground with me. And the difference is Barnett and I are a little different. Barnett's a great grappler. I just don't think he has the same finishing abilities that I do. I have a who's who on when I catch a hold of a limb. I don't think anybody's going to, whether they like me or not, they're not going to argue about the fact that I don't finish fights when I get a hold of something.
They're toe holds.
Yep. Arms. I've broken more limbs than anybody else in the UFC.
You're the arm breaker.
Yep.
I was a jawbreaker when I used to box. Frank Mir, all the best. Good luck to you. UFC 7, April 20th. The HP Pavilion, the Shark Tank in San Jose, California. Daniel Cormier is in the opposite side of the octagon. Good luck there, and I expect
you to
do real well. You seem to be very motivated.
Yeah, no, I'm real excited about this.
This is it, man. This is and people say to me, what's your biggest fight? Your biggest fight is your next fight.
Always your next fight.
All the best to you, Frank.
You're only as good as your last appearance.
Thank you so much. Frank Mir on the Sports Byline Broadcast Network.